Yeah, we're going to do it.
Done?
Yeah, my man. The Kitzer story is that we were talking about this problem, about what was the problem that we're talking about? We're talking about this problem about how you can't know what to do before you're good, or be good before you know what to do. Is that something like that? What's the problem we talked about last time? Last week? Is that what we're talking about last week? 2 weeks ago? Last week? When was it? It was last week. Last week, we talked about that thing called... Oh, I just wanted out of the thing. We talked about the thing called... you can have it if you want. I need to bring the plates. I didn't set it up nicely. Okay, I'll tell you where we are. But why isn't my door closed and stuff? No, that's good. That's for you. We talked about the thing, and the reason we talked about the thing was because of a different thing. This is the way to fill up time when you don't know what you're saying. What we talked about was that since the Rambam was discussing that there is something called someone who knows that he's sick in the moral sense, What?
Did we do that last week? Tom Shechaber.
We got totally sidetracked last week. That's why I'm going back to 2 weeks ago. So two weeks ago, was about this. We were talking about how let me try to clarify. I don't know, remember in the other sheet already, we went past this. But what we got up to was this basic structure. This is why it's important. And you see the Rambam, since we're starting the Rambam is assuming this basic structure because of the way he talks about in Perek Gimel. Perek Gimel is set up in the way that says, and we talk a lot about the setup and what kind of things it presumes and assumes and leads to. His setup is that there's something called Choli HaNefesh, which means, and he goes on to say, it means that you like the wrong things. And not the analogy of a sick person who has the wrong appetite. But that's really just to explain what it means. What it means to be sick is to like the wrong things, or he calls it to imagine that good things are bad and bad things are good and sweet things are sour and so on. That's what it means. And then it goes on, the next move is to say that the solution is, or the process of healing is, to ask a doctor. Okay, this is a very important step in his whole structure. We discussed this a little 4 times ago or 3 times ago, how the doctor is very important, and we could explain a few ways why it's very important. But the first thing that's important from here is to explain to you that you need a doctor, right? And saying that you need a doctor is another way of saying that you don't know the solution, that you don't know the solution by yourself.
But we also discussed how it's a problem. The person doesn't even know that he has issues to go to.
So just to clarify that, there's two different levels of that problem, which he talks about, right? He goes on, the way he says it is that there's two kinds of people. There's two kinds of sick people. There are sick people that know that they're sick, and sick people that don't know that they're sick. If you don't know that they're sick, or if you do know that you're sick, but you just don't go to the doctor, then you're going to be dead. So that person is not really relevant. That the reason why such a person is even mentioned is really just to make sure that you're not that person, to scare you into realizing that you're not, that you might be that person, and you should notice that you're sick, right? Because someone that really doesn't know that they're sick is not totally irrelevant in this entire book. Like, there's nothing I can do with him, really. Right? So the person that's really interesting is the first person. The person that knows that he's sick, he doesn't know how to heal him, what he calls, the process or the trick, the specific kind of knowledge, the art, right? Melecha really should be translated here as art. Does not know the art of healing. And that person who knows he's sick and doesn't know the art of healing will be going to the doctor who does know the art of healing to learn how to heal. And that's what the next chapter is about, which is, as it says in the end of this chapter, that the art of healing is the discussion of the chapter 4. Right? So what we're here about is that that the important thing is. So what we're trying to get at is that even so, if you leave this person that doesn't know he's sick at all on the side, okay, who is, let's say he's not relevant, we could explain why he's a little relevant, but first, if we leave that person off, because it's not really someone that we could at least even all talk about, we could talk about the previous person who seems to be the normal case here, right? The person that the book is addressed to. Now that person is the one that we're struggling with, not the third person, not the fourth person, to be very clear, or whichever number, not the second person, right? The Rambam has two people, one who knows he's sick and one that doesn't know he's sick. Just to be clear, that's not entirely, I made the headers that way, but really it says the people that don't know that they're sick or know that they're sick and don't heal. So really he's talking about a better way of saying it would be someone that doesn't go to the doctor. There could be different reasons for not going to the doctor. One would be for not realizing that you're sick, another one which I don't care enough or something like that. Or many other, I was reading the Rambam's medical text. There could be many other reasons why, ways in which people go wrong. It's actually should be, where's my little, anyways, we should use that a lot here because there's a lot of different ways in which to go wrong, and they're very analogous. One of the problems of this text is that it's way too short and does very little of explaining the like concepts that he's working with. And Rambam in general does very little of that in most of his works, especially his popular ones. He has books, the Rambam wrote a bunch of books known as the Rambam's medical texts. Most of them are also popular texts in some sense. Maybe one of them isn't, depending on how you understand it. They're not like professional texts. They're not written, at least a lot of them are written to people, not to other doctors, in the sense of Rambam was a doctor to the king or whatever he was called over there, the Sultan. And for various like different sicknesses that the guy had, like the Rambam's job was to write him a manual of how to get better. And obviously that was also the Rambam marketing himself and making sure that he stays on the salary there or whatever it was. You could see that from the way it's written. Like you have to do a lot of chanifa to the guy, a lot of flattery and all kind of things. One of the things it talks about, so there's a few of these texts, like about specific illnesses, and he gives like a full regiment. He gives you a full way of how to behave. And of course, the second part of Al Chazdayas is this. And this text is very interesting, because in this text, in Shmuel Prokem, in the end of Perek, in Perek Bez, right? Or actually, no, in this chapter, right? The Rambam just crossed out the subject of what he calls health of the body. He says that's something for the art of medicine to talk about, right? And we already discussed that his source actually did give some definitions for the medical art, and there's a problem here because I'm going off topic here also a little bit, but there's a problem here because the difference between medical, right, refuas hanef guf, which is the bodily medicine, and refuas hanefesh, which is soul medicine, is that they can be even in contradictory terms to each other, seemingly. And that's something that Al-Farabi, who was the Rambam's source for most of the aphorisms and most of the basic concepts there, at least for their the language in which he wrote them and the organization, basically made that clear, that a doctor, insofar as he's a doctor of a body, doesn't care if you're a good person. If you're a doctor to a bad person, you're going to make it more bad in the world. So maybe you shouldn't be that doctor. That would be like a different level of question. But insofar as he's a doctor of the body, his job is to make people's bodies work. His job is not to ask the people what they do then with their body. In other words, if it's even good for those people to be healed. Now, the Rambam, more than one of his medical texts, maybe in all of them, but at least in two of them that I read, he has this like qualification. He gives, because the Rambam's medical texts, and these texts specifically, are very much talking about not only about like healing a specific illness, they're also about giving like a lifestyle, like a diet and exercise, basically a regimen for how to be still healthy or remain healthy and so on. And one of the things he always gets into is talking about health of the soul, in some sense. So there's both sides of this. One side is that there are some things, like since Rambam was working for Muslim kings, now, weirdly, Muslims are not supposed to drink wine or alcohol, and according to the medical art, medical science that Rambam knew, that's not correct. So sometimes you need to drink wine, or you need to drink a certain amount of wine. Taz Naaman was not a big fan of being drunk, but he does believe in drinking a moderate amount of wine for the health of the body. And he actually writes this to this Muslim king and tells him, you know that really you should be drinking more wine, but since, of course, you're not allowed, not going to, he goes on to give alternatives. He gives, like, you could drink this drink that might have some of the benefits of wine without being over the avaira. But, like, his excuse for saying, so how could I even talk to you? And he gives, like, the medical definition of how much wine you should have been drinking. Is like, look, I'm a doctor. I'm not a poisik for your religion. You're going to have to ask the Ruv or your equivalent of the rabbi for that. But, like, it's using this concept of a doctor. Doesn't have to, as far as, like, the doctor is not telling you anything about your soul. He's telling you about your body. It might be bad for your soul to drink too much wine, but it might be good for your body. Another thing is, and of course, it's a question what the Rambam really thought about that, about the Muslim Isra drinking any wine. So another thing
what
is,
what do you mean?
Like, what is he? Is he just okay? Is he playing with?
Playing around?
Yeah, like maybe I don't know. And the same way in the, but a more interesting thing is that on the other side. On the other side, the Rambam gets into like how you should live, and then he gives like a page or two or like two chapters in that book, which says, you know, it's true that I'm a medical doctor, I'm only telling you how to make your body work, but you know that getting too excited is not good for your body either. So therefore, like he says, people get too happy or basically the word is too excited. Like if you get overcome by sadness or by happiness, both of them. He's equally against both of them. He says people die from being too, you know, shocked, like some great...
Because there says he should be sameach.
Yeah, and but Sameach in the Rambam Melchizedek is in a middle term between being too happy and too little happy. Because it's hoilus
ve'atzves.
So
what does hoilus mean?
Too happy.
That doesn't literally mean like being like a jokester or something?
No, it means being too happy. Because then it wouldn't be in the middle. The Rambam has simcha as simcha
means like a medium?
Yeah, I mean, of course. The Rambam has simcha as a medium term. He's not pro Breslov. He's more pro some kind of equanimity, right? Equanimity, like a kind of being not ever being too overcome by anything, which you would call simcha, but not in the sense of ecstasy.
Mm-hmm.
More in the sense of calmness or being self-control, things like that. And therefore, he goes into this whole discussion of. Basically, you need to have good midas in order to be that. There's other concepts of simcha which we were talking about in other cases. Yeah, but when we talk about like the emotion of this, the Rambam is not is in many places about talks about this. The mention of chayim v'rech l'rosh hashem l'chatev. So he goes on to give like a whole mishmas how you know really nothing of this world is worth getting too happy or too sad over. And this is just, I'm not telling you this because I'm your missus. Like, I'm just telling you this because I'm your doctor. And I want you to be healthy. And if you won't, if you'll get too sad over some tragedy or too happy over some success, you won't be healthy. And he sort of gives him the like very general idea of this, of having good midas, and for the purposes of being healthy. So he sort of as a doctor, he doesn't give up on the idea that there is a connection. So very clear distinction that he has here between health of the body and health of the soul, and it says health of the body doesn't belong there. When you actually get to his books on the art of health, turns out they're a little less, more connected than they seem to be here. Because at least part of the health of the body is connected with the health, at least what we call emotional health. It might not be the same thing as ethical health, but emotional health is at least relevant to health of the body. And part of emotional health is not just like a physical thing, right? This has to do with your attitude and your behavior, so it gets very close to ethics, at least, if not entirely ethics. Anyways, why was I saying all of this? Oh, so now back to the discussion of the doctor. Now, and one of the interesting things to use from there is how the Rambam is very interested in reasons why people don't get healthy, even if they have good doctors. Maybe that's what I was saying, he was trying to justify himself, because what happens if he's a doctor and the guy dies or he stays sick or something? So he has to figure out, you know, it's always a very complicated thing. And one of the things that doctors always complain about is that people don't listen to them. You know this, right? Like, the doctor, if you would have listened to all of my advice, you would have been healthy, but since you're still smoking and you're still obese and everything, so can't help you.
Right.
So that's actually one of the things. Aristotle already has that. Aristotle, this, like, in medical imagery is it's in Aristotle a little bit, and it's most a lot more in Plato, and a lot more in the doctors that Rambam read, like Galen, who was a very important doctor, but also wrote on ethical things, and of course Al-Farabi, who Rambam is directly copying from, and they're using a lot more these medical analogies. And why am I saying this? And Rambam, as a doctor, probably likes that, because that's his art. That's his business. That's his profession. But one of the problems with doctors is that it's not enough. You need a way to get people, even as a medical doctor, you need a way to get people to listen to you. And you get into all kinds of problems. What if there's a conflict with other doctors saying differently? And how you, there's all of these like practical issues of how you get the people to listen to the doctor and how a doctor can actually be helpful. Because the doctor isn't the one that's becoming healthy. A doctor is always another person who needs to convince the person to listen to him. So the Rambam has a bunch of like mussar over there that you have to listen to the doctor, and a bunch of different advice about what to do with this conflict in different doctors, like a whole conversation. So that's something that he's interested in here also, like convincing you to go to the doctor. And this thing is like, you know, if you don't listen to the doctor, if you don't go to the doctor, you're going to die. That's something that doctors say as doctors. You see, it's not, I said this last person is really outside of the discussion because it's like not here, so why are we talking about him? But really, we're not really talking about that person. We're talking about someone who's like, who knows that he needs to go to the doctor, or sort of knows, or halfway knows, and like, he might say, well, that's a different doctor that says differently, why would I listen to you? Or says things like, what do I know? Like, it gets lazy. The problem of not listening to the doctor is the same thing almost the same problem. Aristotle uses it as an analogy for the problem of, for the problem of people who know what is good for them but don't do it, right? Which is very,
lazy.
What?
Being lazy?
Not being lazy. This is the problem of what we call weakness of the will, ekrasia in Greek, or the problem of knowing, of the basic problem for which the Yetzer Hara was invented, right? The problem of knowing what you should do and still not doing it. Like, how could it be? And this also connects to the problem of knowledge, like how much does knowledge help? That's what we're getting to. Uh-huh. Or what is knowledge, what is ethical knowledge for, and
so like
what does it do?
Even if the doctor does tell him, then what?
That's still not enough.
Yeah.
Even the, right? So you still have this other step of actually listening to it and actually doing it. So like a big part of his like rhetoric or discussion here is about and knowing. I have other thoughts about why he might be so interested about people that don't know, but we'll get to this. But first, we have to talk about the first thing. So the main person who this is always, so it's both. The main person, or in different ways, right? What we're saying is it's addressed to these different kind of problems in different ways. Like the central person who an ethical work or any ethical work really is about is someone who realizes that he's sick, but doesn't know how to not be sick. That's a way. Now, that person himself, let me get finished what I was talking about. That person, then we'll talk about other things. That person himself is very weird. Weird in the sense that it's hard to understand, and if it's hard to understand, it's probably also hard to work with because we don't know what we're working with. Because they already assumed something and thought some of this question of what thinking helps, right? Because it's not the case. If you would have a very simplistic understanding of what a human being is, or of how these things work, then you have this like imaginary like yetzer hara that you're just fighting with and so on, then it might be easy to discuss. But it's not really like that, since at least in the framework that we're working with here is that the knowledge that we're discussing and the middah that we're discussing, what we call middahs or characters, are almost the same thing, right? It's almost hard to describe how they're different. Because you remember when we said sick doesn't mean either the sensory sense, right? It doesn't mean I find pleasure in the sense of sensory pleasure. Also doesn't mean I think wrongly, because if you think wrongly, then that's a different discussion, right? What it means is something like I like the wrong things, right? Now, liking the wrong things is literally a kind of knowing, thinking the wrong things, or almost. It's something, right, we discussed how maybe it's something, we discussed how it might be something in between knowing and doing, or knowing and literally feeling, but it's a kind of belief or a kind of thing that we see. And even more than that, I can make it even more complicated. This is really what we got at also in the last and two shirim ago. Since the right thing over here only means what reason says is right, according to reason, right? Because we don't have some kind of model where there's some like pushings and some like things that are bad in themselves. When we talk, this is the doctrine of the mean midas of derech hamitzvos, right? Which says that the correct one, which you should like, and not liking the correct one, correct only has a meaning in a reason sense, right? Correct means what reason says is correct. So think liking what is incorrect really means judging wrongly, right? It's not like I know that this is unreasonable, because to see the middle, to see the correct in between, the correct one is already a kind of seeing, it's a kind of judgment. And judging incorrectly or liking incorrectly is really a kind of judging incorrectly. It's very close. These things are very close to each other. So it's very hard to even describe clearly what is going on with this person. How you could both like and not like the same thing at the same time, or both judge something to be good and judge it not to be good at the same time. Because both of these things are judgments, and would be the clearest way to show. Or you can do it the other way around and say that both of these things are like. I could say it in both ways. One, I could say both of these things are judgments, right? Because being attracted or liking the right things means judging that this is good. And when they say at the same time, but I don't like it, so you're judging that it's good or not. Which one? What's going on with you? And the same, or in another, we could do it in the other side, which is that both of these things are kinds of attractions or kind of likings, right? Because we distinguish what we call practical knowledge or practical wisdom from theoretical wisdom, right? Theoretical wisdom is about knowing what is or knowing the truth. That is a different thing. We're not talking about that. What we're talking about is that's one of the excellences of the soul in the sense of the theoretical excellence. But most of this book is not about that. I don't know what we're discussing. But what we're just talking about is knowing is the practical kind. Now, practical kind has as its object what is good. The practical knowledge isn't knowing what is true, but it's knowing what is good. And therefore, knowing what is good and liking what is good are almost the same thing. So it's very hard to actually talk about this person. Since it's very hard to talk about this person, it's also we need some kind of clear understanding of what is going on if we're to fix it, if we're to talk about this problem even clearly, if we're to heal it, if we're to do anything with it. Does this make sense? That's really the issue which we were talking about. Okay. The other kind of people, we should talk about a different time. We should make a different. We should make a note that we should have another class about, and then we should get about he has psikim and stuff.
Know at all?
Yeah, the Rambam goes on. He has a bunch of psikim for that. I think that's a different discussion. Mm-hmm. We're not, or at least to the extent
meaning,
that
is
it's.
Is he completely like unstable or whatever? Or
that's what it says here. But like I'm saying, I don't think he's really addressing that person. He's addressing something that could be that person, and he's telling you not to be that person, right?
Uh-huh.
And the reason why he's telling you not to be that person is because everyone...
How could you tell a person?
Exactly.
That, yeah.
What I'm saying is, I think there might be other things, but I think that what he's saying, the main reason he's saying this is because you are and are not that person. Because everyone, by definition, meaning to say you could be that, because the definition of being sick is being somewhat someone that doesn't know that you're sick. There isn't really someone that's sick and knows that they're sick. That's what I'm trying to get at
in
this whole thing.
Like,
there is a right, because sickness is a problem with knowing. It's not a problem with anything
right.
But a kind of knowing.
Right.
Or at least
so
a specific kind
sick,
of knowing.
Then how could you be considered sick?
Right.
You're sick, right.
Very good. Exactly. So that's the problem. But that's why it makes sense to tell this person, really, don't be the person that doesn't know that is sick.
How can you tell someone like that?
Because he really does know.
So
because
there's
of
such
that.
Thing as someone who doesn't know?
Yeah, no, there is such a thing, but that person is not in this story. The person who we tell there is such a person that doesn't know is really the person that does know, but isn't in this problem. Now, just to be clear, this problem, I got you into this like whole paradox, but it's a paradox in reality. It's not a paradox like that we got stuck. It's an issue because it's a paradox because both of the sides are true. Because in the reality, we have both of these things. We have the fact that there are obviously people, and there's obviously us, right? We obviously know sometimes that we're doing something wrong and still think that it's right.
But there are some people that are wrong.
We're not talking about those people. Again, theoretically, we can't talk to those people.
Right.
But even when the normal case, right, the normal case, like a sort of paradigmatic case here, which is someone who knows that something is good and doesn't know that it's good at the same time,
right,
or maybe not at the same time, whatever. This problem is the normal problem that human beings have. And thinking that this is normal is going to make you stay like that. Realizing that it's not normal is what might save you. And that's why we tell you, don't be someone who thinks that it's okay. Don't not realize that you're sick. Or I could actually tell it to you in a different way. I don't think this is exactly what it means, but I could say something like, accepting the theory that there's the Yetzer Hara is what makes people stay stuck. Because that's like an answer to the question.
What do you mean by that?
What I mean by that is, one of the things we're trying to get at the whole time is that the reality that I think ice cream is bad for me, or too much ice cream is bad for me, and ice cream is good for me, is a contradiction.
Correct.
It's weird. There's something messed up with someone like me who knows that too much ice cream is bad for them, but still thinks that too much ice cream is good for them.
Correct.
And we have all kinds of very much habituated to all kinds of theories that take the edge off this contradiction, that make us feel normal with it. Like, oh, well, yeah, didn't you hear of the weakness of the will? Yeah, what is that? That's just a name for a problem. It's not a solution. Didn't you hear of the Yetzer Hara? Well, no, I never met him. What is that? But this constant Yetzer Hara, the way of people taking off responsibility from yourself, right? Like, it wasn't me, it was even little kids when they teach them in primary about the Yetzer Hara. Often they start using it as an excuse, right?
Right.
It wasn't me, it was my Yetzer Hara. Well, who the hell is that Yetzer Hara? It's you. Well, it's you messed up. Yeah, you are messed up. The fact that you have Yetzer Hara is a problem. You shouldn't be having Yetzer Hara. What does it even mean? Are you a normal person? Do you like it or not like it? Like, which one?
Right?
And I think that this is not what he's talking about, but this is something that I think is true. I think that this being very used to the theory of Yetzer Hara is what allows people to be stuck in one place forever for most of their lives. It's like a way of not really. In other words, when I had a difficulty explaining to people here what it says here. The Rambam says that
we're not seeking help.
Yeah, right. Help for this impossibility that we are stuck in.
Right.
This kasha on how it could be is a kasha on us. It's not a kasha on the Rambam.
Right, right.
It's a kasha on us.
Right.
It's a kasha on us that we are those people that are messed up. And like in some of the classes in the beginning of this chapter, I would try to explain to people that the Rambam claims, and this is the basic claim here, that there's something wrong with you if you like something that is bad. We have been taught to think that it's normal. Yeah, it's bad, but I still like it. Because the liking part is the Yetzer Hara, or someone else, or some other part of the soul, or whatever. And what the whole point of and this is that is not normal. Because think about it. Liking means thinking that it's good for you. Or like, that's what you like, what you think is good. How could you say that you think it's good and think it's bad at the same time? So maybe we could have all kinds of answers. Maybe it's because we forget actually when we eat ice cream that we think it's not good. Okay. But then your work
that's
with,
a better answer than the HR.
Yeah. Because at least you say, okay, I'm a weirdo. I have this crazy, weird memory. Of course, it's not literally forgetting, so it's brown. But like sometimes at night when I get like a craving for ice cream, I forget that I don't really like it. I even forget like that tomorrow morning my stomach is going to hurt. Like it's very weird, maybe, but it's... At least it doesn't cover up
sense.
The problem. It might not be a good answer, but at least doesn't cover up the problem. The Yetzer Hara answer just covers up the problem and makes you think that you're normal when you're not.
Right.
So it's not normal. So and I think that might, I don't know if that's really what he means when he says this, but I think that's one way of not feeling that you're sick.
Uh-huh.
And that's why, like many people are very happy, you'll remember or you won't remember because we didn't get to it yet, but like a very big important, and Rambam when he gets the chapter.
That's what he means here, Mishul Yoda?
Not sure, but that's one way of. I don't know if that's what he means, but I think that that's one of the ways not to know.
Interesting.
I think there's such a way.
Okay.
You'll notice that chapter 6, which gets into this question, a very important chapter that the Rambam made a separate chapter of it because it's such an important question, although it's something that's assumed by the whole book. It talks about the difference between what he calls a perfect person and someone who's self-controlled. And his basic assumption is that it's bad to be self-controlled. Because self-control means I like something bad and I'm fighting against myself to not do what I like. So that's...
We spoke about like fighting against
right.
the...
Right. That's assuming a whole different model. But even with his model, there's a person that still is messed up and likes something bad and fights against it. And the Rambam, the Rambam talks about how there are entire systems who seem to assume that that's because like what we discussed. If you have that system, then that's the default fate of every person. You're always going to be fighting. And a good person is just someone who fights with himself successfully. And Rambam says that this is a crazy person. Because why do you keep on liking something wrong? And that's why then he gets stuck with, what about some Ma'amah Chazal that seems to say that's good, whatever. But this is a very basic point that's behind the whole thing, that it's not normal to be in that situation. I think that itself is some kind of way of not noticing that you're sick. But I do think that there's more than that, and I don't think that's really what he means. That's something that I mean. What he really means is that you don't know that you're sick in the sense of you do know what you don't know, because the problem of this whole sickness is a confusion between knowing and not knowing and not being able to find in which sense I know, in which sense I don't know. And therefore, it's easy to be machriya to the side of knowing. Right? You think, okay, I'm okay. I just have to work on myself. Whenever someone says, I just have to work on myself, you know they're not going to work on themselves, right? Like, I just have to. Saying that, is saying I'm okay, basically, right?
Yeah.
Someone who really thinks he has to work on himself doesn't say that, he just works on himself.
Yeah.
Or he maybe doesn't know how, so he goes to the doctor. Okay, very good. We'll get back to the going to the doctor thing. But I think that that's... So there are people that he has a conflict with, right? There are people that have a wrong ethical thesis. The good that they're pursuing is wrong. But we're not talking to those people. We might be talking about them also, but I think mainly you're not talking to those people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So now, that's how I understand the discussion, the main discussion of this chapter. What I wanted to explain better, and there's a lot to explain better here, is how we actually describe this, right? I think that we do need a better description. We have to find also one that's useful, that helps us. So there's a whole bunch of parts here. One is the part of what does the doctor know and how will the doctor help you? Okay, that's one thing. Of course, how the doctor can help you is based on how he understands where the problem lies, right? And there's the question of what kind of work does the doctor have to do? And do we actually need a doctor? Why does he keep on talking about going to a doctor? And there's the contradiction that we discussed. I'm not going to discuss today, but there's a problem here with, okay, if you just go to the doctor, why does he close the book and give you the phone number of a doctor? He doesn't do that. He gives you, instructions. There's a question about that.
So meaning that he doesn't really mean what he says?
Not sure. Does it mean to say literally go to a doctor, or does he believe there's such a person that's a doctor?
Right.
Or is that all? Maybe that's also, maybe there's not enough. I don't know. I think that's an important question. But I'm leaving that off for now.
Okay.
What I want to describe is something of what he thinks, what is the description of the problem here, what is this knowing and not knowing and all this kind of stuff. Okay, so now there's a whole bunch of things that we could talk about. Where do I start? I start with, where's my note that I always said where I'm going to start? I forgot. Yeah, I start with the question, to what extent, I'm also going to finish with this today, it's around 9:30, but I start with the question of what is the connection between knowing and doing? Very important question. And the reason it's important for us is that we are very used to a theory where they're totally different. Even knowing, not even talking about knowing, does a mathematician need to be a triangle or something? Because those are different kinds of knowing. Knowing of abstract facts or of theoretical truths. We're not talking about that because those are not things that imply any action, right? But knowing that something is good does imply an action, because knowing that something is just another way of saying you should pursue this. This good, that's what good means. Good means something that should be aimed at, so something that should be pursued.
The only way of knowing that is by doing it, or maybe not.
We're looking at this.
Done it?
Okay, that's what I said already.
Okay.
Maybe, but
you said it's a little mixed.
Okay, so I'm going to start. I'm going to start with this. But going back to what normal people in 2026. What's now 25 still? Right, what is it?
Sorry.
Think. They're going to still think it into 2026. normal people are taught to think. Are we used to thinking that knowing and doing are entirely separate, right? So, and even for knowing that you should do, right? That's the weird thing. The kind of knowing of what is good, not the kind of knowing of something else. Now, there's many, many different backgrounds, a lot of philosophical background for why we end up thinking this, but it's not correct. And the main way it can be shown to be not correct is by talking about action, okay? This is also why, for example, most contemporary, and also I think Jewish theories of the good, theories of ethics, can end up talking only about actions. What are the correct actions? What are the right actions to do? There's very little talk, for example, about intention, right? what are the correct intentions to have? Or even less talk about emotions. What are the correct emotions to have? Now, all emotions are, in some sense, forms of intention. Because emotions are sort of attraction and aversion. They boil down to loving and hating, in some sense, most emotions.
Emotions are not a reaction?
They are. So they're a reaction either towards something or away from something.
There's no thinking into that.
Okay. But what I'm saying is just that that modern people that talk about what is good end up almost only talking about what is good to think. Well, sorry, the opposite. What is good to do? Okay. What is the correct thing to do? And even La Halakha people, and you have to do a lot of convincing. It talks about Musa, talks about what you should feel and things like that, and whatever, becomes a whole complication. But in general, people think like that. And the reason why we think like that is because we think, for some funny reason, we think of human action as something that can be described, that can be understood, that can be done, really, entirely separate from any story. That's a way of saying it, from any story. Okay? For example, like there's some things that you do, like an action, like if we think that an action is a physical thing. And if I tell you something, and this is a language that Aristotle says, if I tell you a sentence, animals don't do things. Animals don't have actions, don't have activities. You look at me probably that I'm a shiga.
Yeah.
Of course animals do things. Right. Okay, non-human animals, right? Humans are also animals. So the Heidegger Aristotle said, humans are the only things that do things. Animals don't do things. Animals have no activities. That's what he said. Now why does he say that? Not because he's a shiga and he never knew any animals. You know what I mean? The reason why he says that is because of a very simple thing. Because when we describe a human action, we do not actually mean the physical moving of mass or something from one place to the other or something like that. And this can be seen very easily. Like, and we tend to unfairly cut these things off from their meaning. But for example, if I go and I see someone, I don't know, let's say, like some ambiguous action, right? Ambiguous action in the sense of the fact of the action, right? If I see someone talking to someone else, okay? Now, what is he doing? Well, I'm talking to you. That's probably... Firstly, it's possibly not true. Maybe I'm just talking and there's a shir and I'm talking to the YouTube and you happen to be there. I'm not even talking to you. There's no way very little way of knowing the answer to this question. What am I doing without having context? Without knowing, okay, you're a guy that comes to the shir and therefore probably I'm talking to you in some sense also. And then maybe you could see, oh, before he asked the question, so now he's answering the question, okay? So for example, this word answering a question, right? Where's the activity of, that's something that I do? I'm answering your question, right? So that presumes a whole story. It presumes a certain context. You were there, you're a person I care about in some sense about answering his questions, and therefore when you ask the question, I'm answering it, so I'm not talking to you, I'm having a conversation. What's the difference between talking to someone and having a conversation? Those are not differences that we can distinguish in terms of the activity. Animals don't do neither of these things. They don't talk to people or have conversations. Okay, happens to be they don't talk, but you understand some analogy, right? Well, maybe even animals do have some, but in any case, you understand what I mean.
Basically saying there's no context for exactly. Animals' actions.
Or at least...
They just do.
Right. Maybe they're just driven by certain things, but they don't choose, right? Another way of saying is they don't choose.
They don't choose.
And to talk about human action implies choice, right? In the same way, if I see someone... a pen falling out of someone's pocket, or I see a pen falling out of a car window, it could be falling out, or it could be someone threw it. And the difference between that is that someone do something or someone didn't do it. Although, it might be that my hand literally pushed the pen in the same exact way. Like, if you would have a purely physical description of what's going on, in both cases, my finger opened, and there was some force applied to the pen, and it flew out of the window, and the wind pushed it. All of that is the same exact. But the only difference is sort of in my head, right? Or you could say, if you don't want to leave entirely mad, you can say, in the context, here, I chose to throw a pen out of the window. In a different case, I didn't choose to do it. It's not something I wanted to do. It's something I chose to do. I just flew out of the window. That was a different action. So at the level of action, and some people get very confused about this because then they say, okay, so the actions are not what defines anything. It's only intentions, and then doesn't matter what you did. Like, I wanted to throw a pen out of the window, but I didn't. No. I'm talking about the description of the action, not talking about that, like, as if there's like an atomic action that has no relation to anything, and then there's a question of how human intention something connects. So what I'm saying is that the actual description of a human activity makes no sense without some context. Maybe some of the context is your intention, maybe it's not only your intention, right, because it has to do with what happened before that, what happened after that. It might even have to do with entire life story, like with an entire, and this is what Aristotle would really claim when he claims that there is a moral or ethical, in the sense of a part of the good life, meaning or significance to all kind of little actions. What that means is that it has a meaning, and the real meaning of this is in the context of this person, this entire story of his whole life. Like I am, there's two people, one person is learning a book, another person is learning a book, but these are two different things. They're doing two different things because one of them has like some plan or his life, he's going to be a Aruv, and therefore he's learning. So he is becoming now a Aruv. Although the other person is just reading it because he's curious. There's like they're doing different things. Not because there's a difference in the level of like what they're doing, but because of the difference in the story of what they're doing, right? I think that this helps a lot in Lamdas. If you get into halacha about theories of action, you'll see that, and many people are very confused about this because they have this very much too strong dichotomy between thinking and doing, or even between intention and doing, or between context and doing, right? I could be moving something and I'm doing some whole different activity from someone else. And there's a McIntyre in his book gives examples of this, like very nice that I don't remember. Can't think of his name. Like he gives like these examples where you like see two people meeting on a street, and they're giving something to someone else, and like based on the you need to know the context of the story, there'd be totally different actions. Like and like you could imagine like if you do like people watching, like you can imagine totally different stories. And those different stories are not like something that's not in the action. They're just we're missing some knowledge sometimes. But it's really if I meet you on the street and I give you an envelope, what happened? Well, if you're my employee and I'm paying you, so now I did an action of paying my employee. If you're a spy that we met up to give you the secret, that's a different, whole different activity, right? The thing is different. It's not the actual action in the sense of like physical level is the same, but human actions are not really that. Their significance, their meaning, right? The meaning of the action is not in the action. It's in the entire context. And this is why, says McIntyre, for example, if you don't have context, you can't have any ethics. You can't have morals. You can't have good things because we tend to think different. Like you always like this very disconnected. The good thing is something good. No, a good thing isn't never good unless it plays a role in some, because it doesn't even make sense. It's not even an action. It's not only isn't it good, it's even nothing. Like if you're in a desert, maybe there are some things, because that's also context. There are some things that are good to do there. Okay. But most of the things that we do, or when we talk about what's good, we mean that in this whole story, that is something that's going to make you closer to your goal or further from your goal. Or, it's going to help the other people around you or hurt them and so on. So you need those people there for it to make sense. And if we have like some kind of theory, which it seems like most modern people end up having, we're like, no, we have to like judge each action on its own, either by what its intention is or by even what its consequences are. But we don't understand that the actions itself become what they are from their context. And again, how broad the context is, it might be very broad. Like, if someone is a yid and he says he eats matzah on Pesach, right? Now he's doing something for zech letzias mitzrayim. He's not eating a matzah. In other words, it's not like a kavona. You have to have kavona. Like you have to remember. It doesn't matter what you remember. It's because of the real reality. You ate matzah, and your father ate matzah, and your zayde ate matzah. So now you're eating a matzah of Pesach. You're not eating a cracker. Some people say the halacha is eat crackers. No, halacha is eat crackers. The halacha eat matzah on Pesach. Okay, we can get into all kinds of weird educations. What if, blah, blah, blah. But the normal case is you eat matzah on Pesach. Matzah on Pesach is something that comes, only means something. Okay, Sefirot Yisrael, that's why it's very easy. That's the story. That's like the context of it. And it's supposed to give the context to all. Like, by the way, this is what the Pesach means, according to this understanding, right? And it says, like, Kishol Chabencha, what are you doing? Right? But basically he's saying, like, if you stand outside the context, it makes no sense. Like, what are you doing? Your what is the question about? You're giving your Bechor to the Chavayis, you're making a pidyon haben. What are you doing? There's no answer to this question, what are you doing? And we also get confused about this in time. It's, what are you doing? Well, some weird thing, I'm taking 5 shekel and giving it to a kohen because my... What are you doing? Oh, because Hashem said, Shkoyach. That doesn't help. That doesn't make the action have a meaning. That might be an intention. When I say, oh, look, there's a whole story. There was once, whatever, however the logic of the story is supposed to work. So now the answer is, what I'm doing is a new thing. I changed the meaning of the action. Now what I'm doing is something that helps because the Eibishter saved the Bechoyrim, I'm somehow, doesn't have to really make sense. I'm remembering that fact or something like that. Like, Dashti Kol Peterechem, blah, blah, blah.
The story changes what the action
exactly.
Really is.
And it's a different kind, just to be clear, this is a different kind of giving reasons for things. We're very used to giving reasons in the sense of giving reason why you're doing this thing. The reason is the whole story. If I wouldn't be in this whole story, it wouldn't make sense, right? Yeah. It's not like since this exists in Mitzrayim, so a goy should do Peterechem, or he shouldn't, because he's not in that story. No, maybe it has different stories of his own, no problem. But this story, or maybe you could come part, whatever. Again, we get into edge case problems. The point is, the meaning is in the whole context. It doesn't have a meaning without the story, without the thought. And this also means, so this is a very simple thought. For some reason, people tend to miss it. I know why, because the whole history, but that's not the Shia today. But people tend to miss it. Now, this also means that if you want to change people's behaviors, or your own behavior, you do not start with the action. It's a very silly place to start. Because what makes you act, and what the meaning of the action is, and the way actions work, is not just, okay, you know something? What am I going to do? So, for example, I'm going to give very silly examples that I get stuck in. Okay, like, okay, you should wake up at 6 every morning for a mitzvah, a daven or something. Okay, and suddenly I don't do it. Why don't I do it? And this is, again, I'm going back to my analysis. Because I don't think it's good. I don't like it. But I think it's good. Well, no. You think it's good in the abstract. Okay, that's a different discussion. But you don't actually think it's good for you. Obviously. Otherwise, you would do it. Because it's better to sleep, obviously. It is, by the way. Why should you? Okay. Now, but for example, I'm just giving you an example. That without getting this, in, I pushed in another aspect. But let's say I want to change it. So I could change it. And it's so funny. I've seen so many people do this and they don't get it. Like my Mishgiach used to say it. And like this. My Mishgiach used to say, you don't wake up in time. You'll still have a job. He'll wake up. So the reason you're not waking up is because it's not yet true. But he didn't realize that that doesn't work yet. When I'll have a job, I will be doing something else by waking up, right? If I have a job that I understand that it's needed, it's either a need or I even like it, that like home of the drag. So then I'm not waking up. There isn't, like the Mashgiach had this funny imagination like the previous model we discussed. Like there's this power pushing you into bed, a magnet. Then there's a counter magnet to get you up. And you're saying, what do you mean? I have such a strong yetzirah, I'm not going to go. So he's proving you from the other story that you do have a strong enough magnet to wake you, get you out of bed. So why are you not doing it now? Stop off all this trick. So now what I'm telling you is that this is nonsense. Because this is like forgetting about how people work. In this story of the Bachar Yeshiva that needs to wake up for the Seder, that's not a story that I buy so strongly. It's good enough that I'll come for the fourth time when you throw me out the next day. Okay, I'll come for 2 days then. For that, it's good enough. It's not good enough to wake you up every day. How do you change it? Not by like applying more pressure to this like spring that gets you out of bed. It's by changing a different story. Now let's say I have a family, I have to provide for my wife and children, and in order to do that I have to work. Now I'm not waking up. I'm not pushing myself out of bed in the morning. I am a person who has a job who wakes up in the morning. It's a different activity. And of course, that activity, it makes sense. It's correct. That causes me to wake up. If the Mashgiach would understand this, he would think of changing your story. Like he would realize that he's telling you a bad story. Whatever the story is that you reason for him to wake up is not a good enough reason. In other words, maybe he thinks it's good enough, but obviously it's not working because people didn't buy it. So we have to change the story. And I think there are people that are smart enough to realize this, but in general, the language that we get is totally missing this, and they think like we even like make. I have a raya, kavachomer. You see that you like making it like a raya from. Yeah, you see that song like because and the reason why this kavachomer even think people think that it works is because they don't realize that our actions only make work because of a certain context, because of a certain story that we have in our head. This is not like psychology. This is understanding of what actions is. And therefore, so says, for example, says Aristotle, the first thing, like, when he starts, and of course there's these, like, limitations you have to, that you mentioned before, that it's very hard to start by explaining what the good is. You need to have some kind of practice first. Okay, well, forget about that. Let's say we do have somewhere to start, because all thought is we start somewhere, and then we refine it, and then we go back. Then we refine it again. So that's, you understand, it's not really like, we don't really get stuck in that because all thought, Aristotle says this, all thought, all science starts with like, we notice something empirical, right? I see that Newton sees apple falling and then he tries to make a theory of it and then he checks it again. That's, and he makes abstractions, see if they work. That's normal. So we see something is good from activity and, okay, from our education side. That's why we talk about education in other places. But now, I'm struggling somewhere, right? I'm wanting to get better. I want to be perfectly good. So now you think, okay, so the answer is do everything, do more. And there's not doing more. You need to show me, and in his languages, you need to show me the goal better. He says, and I printed out the page. Oh, it's this page, because I went looking all the places where he says that the knowing would help. There's a whole book about it, but in the previous book, it says...
Which number?
And number one. You see a number one?
Yeah.
That's the first one. There's more complicated ones. And first one it says, skip all the way to, so the last thing.
So.
It talks about how there should be one goal, one end in everything, because otherwise we'd be stuck in things that are goals for other things, and then where does it end? But anyways, if there would be a good, which is the highest goal in life, then would not an awareness of it have a great weight in one life, so that, like archers who have a target, would be more apt to hit on what is needed. So he has this image of a target. Okay, if I would go to my Mashgiach and say, look, I have this target, I'm supposed to reach the middle, happens to be I'm keeping on going there. So he'd say, you have to be Mishazik and you're aiming. Yeah, thank you very much. But how do I do that? Well, I have to have a better view of the target. Of course, there's also figuring out how to calibrate your shooting or whatever it is to reach the target. Okay, but very often, or maybe in some sense, most of the problem is that I can't see the target clearly. Or I see it, but you know that a lot of actually hitting the target is to know how to see it clearly, right? Because a person that's naive, he thinks that he's hitting the target, but really, for all kinds of reasons, you have to turn a little less or a little more according to how far it is, and you forgot about the wind. I don't know, all kinds of things. So there's a seeing what you're a lot of what you're learning is not. It's like someone would say, I already know how to hit the target, but I'm just not doing it because I have Yetzer Hara, right? Like our Ilkman story, that would be very dumb. What I have to teach you, and it could be that part of the teaching is just a habit, right? Maybe part of it is someone that has experience, so he knows how to see the target. But it's not only that he knows how to hit the target. There's nobody that knows how to hit the target better. There are people that know how to see the target better in relation that's good fine motor skills, right? Even before hitting target. Like, you know better how to catch the ball and to see it where it is, and then you get it right away, and you jump not too early and not too late, and so on. So it's the actually learning how to see the target, which will probably give us at least a better chance of hitting it. And in the same way, if the good is the target, this is his language, right? By the way, this is also the Torah's language, right? You know that chet, the word chet, which we translate as sin, really just means missing the target, right? Like l'hachti asamat Torah is such a language. And chet means a stia, like a miss. Really, the word sin should be translated as miss. Like there's hits and miss. I don't know. If you hit, it sounds like a bad word. But I don't know what's the opposite of a chet. But a chet literally means missing the target. And sometimes it's literally used in that way in the verb. So, and why are we missing the target? At least it stands to reason that knowing, seeing the target more clearly would help us hit it. And he says the same thing later when he talks about practical. I didn't bring it here, but he talks about practical wisdom, which is more specifically the seeing the good. He says that we always have to, like, we're either like sharp, getting closer or further from the target. But we have to be able to find a way to see the target. Otherwise, we can't do the activity. Since part of the activity is that what it means to do something good is to mean to aim towards the correct thing in the correct way. So part of doing this, this is why it makes sense to say that ethics is a study of practice, right? The goal, like I said, the goal of this book is, it says somewhere here, the goal of this book is not to know something, but to do something. I think I brought it here. I don't see it now. I thought it's in the... in three lines before the bottom of the first page. Since the end of hearing this is not knowing but action, right? It's not about like you have a nice theory, but studying action. Part of action is always something that's goal directed. All human action. That's what it means. Maybe there's non-human action that's not. We can discuss if nature has goals. That's like a physical, metaphysical question. But for sure, human activity has goals. And therefore, refining the goals and refining the ways of seeing those goals and finding those goals and knowing how to find those goals in all kinds of situations, right? Maybe there's a problem. Maybe a big part of like finding the middle, the mean in human action is like, what is the thing that I should be aiming at in this situation? Okay, that's true. But it's always all making the action better includes within it making the end, finding the target better. And this is all because, like we said, this target can be the specific target of this specific action. It can be like the kind of thing that I should be looking at is good in this category of actions. It could be even, according to like things like McIntyre says, and Aristotle also says, you can only be good in the full life. Like a good person is someone whose whole life is good. Because being good means your whole life was directed in a coherent way, like a coherent story of your life. Otherwise, it's very hard to even be good. Because part of being good is, in this way of learning, I am the kind of person, I am becoming the kind of person that does this. I'm aiming to be that kind of person. I am already this kind of person who does that. So you need the whole person. And the person just means, a person doesn't mean a body, it means a life story, right? When we talk about person in this sense, and the soul, we talk about like a soul or this level of soul. We're not talking about some static thing. We're talking about the person, this story of his life, the narrative of his life. So you might need all the way from the narrative of your whole life, and maybe, and Aristotle also discusses this, maybe if And for sure, like religions like Judaism, will have like a history, would include in this goal all of the history, or maybe all of human history, or maybe all of your family's history or whatever, because your activities are part of that story. They only make sense in that story, and you have to understand that story better in order to know maybe what the future of it is, or what the past of it is, or what the basic form of it is. And then, and the same thing going back all the way down to one specific action, you know, like what the goal is, like what am I aiming at? This is why, and this is not the Rambam's point about the doctor here, but this is also why the like exemplary person is very important in this system. We talked about this a few times, right? Because that's like a picture of what the goal would be, or this image of like what a perfect person is, or like the theory of what it is, and so on. But anyways, I think that's enough for today. That's like my first very important thing, where unlike what people think, activities are not a separate thing from their goals, at least not human activities. And therefore, to make them better, and since better just means hits their target, the correct target, maybe you have the wrong target, so you have to learn what the correct target is. And then, and maybe even automatically you'll hit. Maybe there's some parts of like being wrong is a wrong way of hitting the target. Or maybe people have like literally perception mistakes, like, you know, like learning how to do art, learning how to even like aim. A lot of it, like I was saying, is a way of seeing, right? And, if you're learning how to do like representative art, you have to learn how to see the world in a way that you could then represent in your whichever art form you're doing, because most people don't realize how to see the world correctly. Like, you know, like when you tell people to make a picture, they make everything too big and too small, and they don't know how the perspective. And when you see it correctly. Why can't I just make a picture? I have to study that, because I have to study how to see the world, what my aim, what my target is. And that's it's an intellectual thing. Of course, maybe the only way to do it is to practice it, but you are learning something in that. And the same thing is for virtue, for how to be a good person. Many people, I think, have a very analogous situation where they think they know what the end goal is. Like, I've seen a tzaddik, at least I have a picture in my head of what an ideal person would be. And then they reproduce it, and it comes out like a kid who makes a picture of people, and like, you know, their heads are too big and their feet are too small. And like, why? Because for some reason in your imagination, that's how a person looks. You know, there's an exercise on the internet of giving people to draw a bicycle from memory. And you know how a bike looks, right? It's like 80% of people make something that has no relation to a bike. There's wheels, and they're kind of, you think about it for a second, you realize, firstly, there's difficulty in the technique, but that's the smallest issue. Like, people don't realize how people have this, like, very lossy, the pictures in their head, that has to do with how perception works, but people, like, you don't realize that in order to draw a bike, you have to know how to look at it. Like, wait, how does the front wheel actually connect? And you'll know, I have to send you the link. You'll see, it's very funny. People totally messed up how to see. Like, you don't know how to see the world correctly. You know, of course, how to ride your bike. And so for that person, but not for the purposes of making the art, the representation, you don't know, that you have to study this. And it stands to reason that for the purposes of acting correctly, we often have similar problems. Like, we know how an ideal person what is, but we don't really know how to do it. This is why even people, when people try to imitate, like, the ideal people in their head or that they read in a story, it comes out very funny. It's almost like the kid that makes the head very big and, like, the, you know, like, the proportions are all messed up, because, like, that's how it seems to look. You thought that that's what you saw, but it's not what you saw. So we have to study what you actually saw and what the goal would be. And then, I don't know if automatically your activities will be good, but at least you'll have what to judge it by. So that's like, you'll like the correct thing. And then we have to get, and maybe in the next class or in some next class, we could try to talk about what the smallest level of this is. Why, how we have all kinds of levels of knowledge here. Just talked about the biggest level in some sense, but this level has to go all the way down to a specific action and then you get to the level of literally habit, which is in some sense just the habit of seeing the right thing in each action. Okay, that's...
What if this whole shear make it a worse problem of finding a doctor? Because now every person is... You can't just find the doctor. The Rambam's not going to give you a number.
Why not?
Because now every person has their different narrative of why they do things.
Well, also... But,
so you need...
That point is problem when
maybe,
we say it this way.
Each person should be their own doctor.
Not each person, because at least, there are some, there's a problem here, but that's the problem of particularization. In other words, Aristotle and Rambam for sure think that there's one good narrative of a life. There are many ways, specific, like you could have a different profession, be living at a different time and have different things. But what it means a good life is like some general form of that narrative, which is the only one that's good. At least almost the only one. It's a complicated thing. It's true for because of the way I said it, it becomes very complicated. Like, it's true. Like, could a Jew go to a non-Jewish doctor in this sense? Maybe only in a very general sense. Because, like, if you go to the Rambam does Aristotle's ethics, but the Aristotle doesn't tell you to chuckle a lilith, and the Rambam definitely thinks you should, right? At least if you're a Jew. So some part he isn't learning from him. And this is a really a good question. Like, it's a very complicated question. But it probably what he would tell you is that some level of human, of the narrative, when you talk about the good human life, we're talking about the narrative form of human life, but when we talk about it in universal terms, which is what definitely what the Rambam was doing, saying like a perfect human, someone who's not too angry and not too, what we discussed earlier, right? Not too excited ever. That's a general thing. Now, what is he too excited about? And how maybe there's some differences according to situations, some situations and some people, because of the kind of life they chose to live or they live, need to have more, a little more excitement. Yeah, that level of particularization, and that might be also where a lot of people go wrong. It's not. It could be that there's a big problem with that.
But that's the solution. But figuring out the problem, right? Why do you like this? That all comes from the narrative. That all comes from. So you need the doctor to diagnose why you are liking the wrong things. No.
Yeah, but. When I say narrative, I don't mean like the story I tell myself. I mean that's what I mean is like the correct story I should be telling myself, or the correct story, the correct way in which a life should unfold. And there is a good way. Like, of course, everyone is going to be first a child and then an adult, and so on. And the ideal here is that in the end you should be someone that's wise and good, right? Those are very general terms, of course, wise and good. It's not helping me very much to know exactly what to do. But it's a wise and good means always doing the correct thing. Of course, people are going to be in different situations. They're going to what the correct thing is going to be different. But it's something about a very general thing. But it's true. What you're saying is a problem. It's for sure a problem for the way McIntyre this makes it make sense. I don't know if we have to exactly say it in his way, but that's a whole different discussion. But the point is, even for the Rambam, there's a problem, and that's the problem of getting down to the level of particulars, which might need a whole different kind of. That's why I said that we talk to a very general kind of wisdom, which is seeing the end. But it could be that we have to get a big part of the problem is getting to the very smallest level, like where you know how to make that match with a very specific action that I'm doing right now today, or not only today, in my family, in my society. And so on, and that might be a big problem. That's, like I said, it's proud. I don't even know if the Rambam literally means you should go to a doctor. Of course, he also means that, but yeah, to find the right one, it's true that it becomes a bigger problem. And it's true. I mean, everyone knows. If you want the good advice, you need someone that knows you, that lives in your context. Otherwise, it's very hard to. It could be that the whole context is messed up, also. That's a different. that's what the Rambam talks about later in chapter 4, and so on. That's why you have to live in a good city. Very important. You realize how important it is. Because the meaning of your activities are not all the time determined by you. If you live in a bad city, it's almost impossible by this understanding to be good.
Oh, wow.
Not only, like, we always understand, okay, you're going to learn bad middos, but they're going to make the bad middos good, right? Because for this city to flourish, you need to have bad middos, and it's not going to flourish. It becomes even a bigger problem. Yeah, these are problems. Okay.
He says that on this?
Yeah.
Or here?
Yeah, both. And drama always talks about how society, how the environment is important. And if, according to this way of understanding, it's not just because you learn things from your environment, like people understand that. It's also because what you do is determined by your environment, and the meaning of it means what your environment teaches you.
Right.
And what your environment needs and what it structures what you're doing.
Or it will confuse you what is good in order to
that's a small,
that
exactly. But that's like even that is a smaller issue.
Uh-huh.
The bigger issue is because of what we're saying, that what you're doing means. Right, so and that's why that was also our class on after Shavuos. That's why hopefully some of what we received as being born Jewish is a good environment, at least like throughout history, and we remember only the good things and not the bad things, you know. So it gives you a possibility to be good. It might not even be possible for a person on himself to be good in this sense.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in other sense, yes. This is the question. Yeah.
Right.
Press my red button and shine.